Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
Welcome back to ClickSuasion. This is Michael Barbera. We're here today with Kelly Peters. Here's some things that we know about Kelly. Kelly is the CEO and co-founder of BEWorks. Kelly's given multiple TEDx talks with, I think, more than 60,000 views. And Kelly also is an expert in credit risk, which means she's probably judging all of us right now. Kelly, what don't we know about you?
Something that you might not know about me is that I go to Burning Man. I'm just getting ready for Burning Man now. And I've run an experiment out there because I was super curious about this whole crazy experiment of Burning Man. And I wanted to understand it from a scientific perspective.
Now, that's super interesting. So I am not what you'd say a Burning Man expert, but now you need to correct me if I'm wrong here. I believe that Burning Man, you're not supposed to take any, modern electronics with you. Is that correct?
Well, there's a couple of principles that guide the culture at Burning Man, and one of them is immediacy, and our phones distract us very much and serve as a, you know, kind of something in between our participation and being behind the phone. And so we're discouraged from using electronics. That said, there's some really cool stuff at Burning Man, like an observatory with a state-of-the-art telescope for us to enjoy. So the difference is, you know, how we're using these technologies. Are they in the way of our participation, or are they enhancing and augmenting it?
I like it. So will you be doing old school data collection with pen and paper?
Yes. And one of the things that I support is the census that happens at Burning Man. And that is very much old school pen and paper. And then people are encouraged to complete the long form census online after the event. And the team gets, you know, 10, 20,000 and more of the participants to complete the long form census, which is incredibly useful for academics and people who are curious about the impact of the event on people's lives and have a more empirical set of questions about, you know, who attends the event and what it's all about.
Applying behavioral economics to business, putting it into practice, to the average practitioner, business leader, it could be overwhelming or add more stuff to someone's plate. What are some good ways to apply BE or BF to, say, any business?
The thing that people should think about behavioral economics is that there's three pillars to it. And I think that understanding these three pillars might help people understand the breadth and complexity of behavioral economics. So if we break it down into three pillars, the first one then would be understanding behavioral economics as a foundation for fantastic research. That's the research on understanding the biases that we have that influence our decision making. And this will help companies to have a much more realistic understanding of how customers and employees and even managers might make their decisions. So the first plank then of behavioral economics is just about understanding how we make decisions. And with that understanding, now we're in a much better position to move on to the second pillar, which is to impact and influence behavior. And the language of BE is to use choice architecture and to design much more thoughtful approaches to impacting behavior. So if we understand those biases, then we're in a better position to impact behavior. Then the third pillar is really the foundation of behavioral economics, and that is the role of scientific thinking. Those insights, right, the biases, those things were generated through careful experimental research. the understanding of the impact on people's behavior was done through, you know, careful experimentation, again, to see what actually works. And so experimentation then is the foundation upon which behavioral economics sits. So if people understand those three planks, that BE can be used for research, BE offers choice architecture, and then BE offers this platform for scientifically driven research, then they can start to dig into to each of those and start to design experiments that test their hypotheses about human biases and test their hypotheses about what will impact behavior.
What are some common biases that occur in decision making?
Well, one of them is not even recognizing the role of intuition in shaping our opinions and in influencing our actions. That's really the starting point of behavioral economics, is to put that intuition under the spotlight and subject it to scrutiny and recognizing the limits of our intuition. Our intuition is often very powerful and right and leads us on the correct path. But the important thing is to recognize intuition itself is subject to all kinds of bias. That's really the starting point for behavioral economics.
When using behavioral economics or behavioral finance in practice, how could we use it so it benefits, or how can we apply it so it benefits both the organization and the end user?
We can use behavioral economics to benefit both the end user and the organization itself by understanding that we can have a much more intentional approach to the outcomes that we want to see. I mean, this is particularly compelling for organizations that, you know, are involved in financial decision making. You know, banks want to help customers, you know, buy insurance, buy the right kind of insurance to cover their needs. And yet insurance is an incredibly difficult product for people to understand and buy. And so a well-designed program will take into consideration that this is not something that people engage in regularly, so they don't develop the skills to understand how to buy the insurance in the way that best represents their needs and their risk. So good choice architecture then ought to be helping the customers to buy the product and helping the organization to position it better.
What are your favorite biases, or I should say, which biases is Kelly biased about?
Well, I think, again, the most important thing for us to all understand is the role of intuition in influencing our decision making versus very careful, deliberative thinking. And that would mean fundamentally changing the language that we use. So one of the things that organizations ought to do is to, instead of saying, "I think that the correct course of action is X," is to make a simple reframing of, you know, "It's my intuition that the correct course of action is X." That subtle difference, right? "I think" versus "it's my intuition that," can lead to very different organizational behavior and response. The first one is very ego-driven, very affirmative, and kind of creates some barriers to people challenging that kind of thinking and sort of thwarts some skepticism in the ears of the listener. Whereas when we use language like "it's my intuition that," here we're inviting skepticism, we're inviting people participating in the gathering of evidence and the thinking through of the idea even further. This simple reframing is important because if we don't recognize the difference between having the evidence for something versus merely using our intuition, then we're vulnerable to making mistakes.
Let's talk about those challenges and objections. So let's take a journey back towards your past. Your past in credit scores and financial decision making. So I think most people would say, "I'm a fantastic financial decision maker. I don't make any fallacies." What are some behaviors that affect our credit scores and some fallacies that we believe might affect them as well?
I think one of the biggest challenges that we face when it comes to financial decision making and our financial behavior is underestimating the power of compounding, whether it's compounding interest influencing our savings over the long term. You know, the earlier we start, significantly and exponentially better it is. But it's also the inverse, the power of compounding, when it affects our credit, and the cost of interest can get ahead of us pretty dramatically. And so understanding the fact that people misestimate the power of compounding, then it's very important that people develop some habits. We actually did a really interesting experiment testing the impact of impulse payments on people's credit cards. So instead of just waiting for the credit card to be due and making a payment at that time, we encouraged people through a little message saying, "Hey, do you want to make an extra payment this month?" And it turns out we were able to get over 10% of people to make an additional payment just by being nudged in the moment to make a small amount. In this case, we had said, you know, "Do you want to make an extra payment of $10? And we were looking at seeing, first of all, just how likely people would be to take us up on that offer. And now we're super curious about trying different amounts, higher amounts, and looking at the effect that that has on people's longitudinal behavior. And we're interested in customizing the amount based on people's individual credit behavior. Really, what we want to do is see if we can help people get a better handle of paying down their debt in as timely a fashion as possible."
So I would believe that's a great way to get people to reduce their financial liabilities. There are also some people that might argue and say, "Well, you're just nudging people to spend more money when they could just pay the minimum." So there's two sides to that argument, depending on your lived experience. What would you say are some of the ethics involved in behavioral economics or behavioral finance? Or more specifically, what are the ethics when applying it into practice?
Well, one of the first things that we should think about for behavioral economics is it's no different than the work that the advertising industry and the standards bearers of that field have thought through for decades, which is fundamentally that we can't be misleading to consumers. We shouldn't say things that are untrue about the product or its benefits. And we've had regulation to help enforce those standards. So behavioral economics ought not be any different than that. And I think we can go further, though, in thinking about behavioral economics, which is that, you know, in the inverse, not using it is potentially harmful as well. I like to point out the work that Cass Sunstein has done and what he said about this issue, which is that, you know, even if we're not intentional about it, we're always creating a choice architecture. When we're designing a forum, when we're designing a product, when we're designing a service and how we're positioning it, we're always influencing behavior. The question is, are we recognizing the influence that it has on people's behavior? And experimentation then is a fantastic way for us to understand any implications, backfiring, or counterintuitive impact that the thing that we're designing has on people's behavior. So we might be naive about the impact. And that's actually the question then that we should ask ourselves is, you know, are we actually getting the most out of this program, and are we impacting and influencing our consumers in the best way possible?
So it's obvious that, or evident that, you and I both love behavioral economics. The people in our circles love BE and BF, but we have to admit it's not a sexy name, and that when we were younger, we probably didn't say to ourselves, "I want to be a behavioral economist when I grow up." And I doubt there are many people that are in elementary school saying that same phrase. So what was the turning point for you? How did you get involved with this, and what made you say, "This is my field"?
I became fascinated by behavioral economics when I realized that it went significantly beyond risk management theory and behavioral finance. When I realized that it offered a path to very innovative strategies, that's what excited me. The risk management theory and behavioral finance did a great job of pointing out the biases, and that's great. You know, there's hundreds of ways that we make mistakes in our thinking, and the biases are fascinating to learn about. And of course, very, very useful. But the thing that became particularly compelling for me about behavioral economics was, not only is it about challenging this notion of, you know, rational choice theory, but it goes significantly beyond that. That's this role of choice architecture and designing these nudges, these interventions that can actually use these biases to help us make better decisions and have better behaviors, and the consistency between what we say we want to do and what we actually do. So it was the impact on real world behaviors that became the most compelling part of behavioral economics.
Now, what you actually did was design and put into practice a successful organization that applies BE to the real world. Tell us about BE Works.
BE Works is a fantastic venture of scientists who want to impact the world, both directly by applying scientific insights to real world challenges, like how we make financial decisions, how we consume energy, how we make our choices about how we're going to commute. It's about solving those kinds of problems, but on an even more meta level than that, it's about transforming society and the economy through scientific thinking. It's about the use of scientific insights as a path to changing.
What is next for BE Works, or how could we engage with BE Works in the near future?
What's next for BE Works is about telling our story, getting the word out there about what we've been doing. We've been so heads down since we got off the ground, just, you know, designing experiments and working with companies and organizations to employ behavioral economics. So we haven't had a chance to tell our story. So thanks very much for the opportunity today to do that.
We always want to harass you and hear your story. That's the whole point here. Okay, now let's harass you about, let's learn more about Kelly. Okay, what is the book you most recently completed?
The book I've just read was called The Survival Guide to the Misinformation Age, which is all about the role of using scientific thinking in understanding some of the big questions in life and how anyone can access scientific thinking in a way to improve their understanding of the world and to challenge some of the you know, crazy beliefs that people have.
In three words, describe yourself as a teenager.
Asked why often.
Name something on your life or bucket list.
For me, it's it's seeing the world and seeing scientific thinking come to life, working on things like human rights and expanding the role of scientific thinking and all across the globe.
And when your book becomes a number one bestseller, who would play you in a movie?
Probably Robin Wright, because we seem similar, I've been told. But I'm hoping maybe Robin Williams to capture my goofiness.
And what is your kryptonite?
It's horoscopes and anti-vaxxers or flat earthers.
I'm sure there are some academics just shaking their head at you right now. And then, Kelly, what's next for you? I think I kind of gave away the story about the book, but go ahead and tell us what's next.
Yeah, it's writing a book. I want to share all the secrets of BE Works. I want to help everyone understand how to apply behavioral economics to not only their lives, but to helping their organizations be more effective.
And Kelly, if any of the listeners want to harass you or harass your team at BE Works, how could they get in contact with you?
I'm super excited about helping share scientific thinking and behavioral insights. So ask away. I can be reached on Twitter. I'm at Kelly BE Works at Twitter, and I'm also on LinkedIn, and I try to share some of the most interesting research that I come across. And BE Works is also on social media, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, LinkedIn, and our email address is there as well at www.beworks.com.
All right, Kelly, thanks so much for being a guest on ClickSuasion. As always, you're a rock star. Thanks for being here. And for the listeners, go ahead and harass Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to ClickSuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at ClickSuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @ClickSuasion.